For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. This program contains graphic descriptions of abortion procedures. Opinions expressed are those of the participants and may or may not reflect those of this station. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Gentlemen, in the past few weeks, there have been a plethora of bills proposed in state legislatures that would codify the, quote, right to abortion. A big one came through the state of Virginia, I believe. I want to play a little sound clip here and get your comments afterwards. A state of Virginia delegate, Kathy Tran, recently came under fire for sponsoring a bill in the Virginia House of Delegates that would allow the termination of pregnancy up to 40 weeks. Virginia House Bill 2491 would roll back a number of requirements. Here's Delegate Tran's defense of the bill before the Virginia House of Delegates.
This bill would remove the following statutes: trap or targeted regulations of abortion providers, removing language classifying facilities that perform five or more first trimester abortions per month as hospitals. It would repeal Virginia's informed consent mandatory ultrasound and 24-hour delay. It would repeal the requirement that second trimester abortions be performed in a hospital licensed by the State Department of Health. It would repeal the requirement for two additional physicians in cases of third trimester abortions.
Delegate Tran.
Yes, sir.
How late in a pregnancy would your bill apply if a physician was simply willing to certify that the continuation of the pregnancy would impair the mental health of the woman? How late are we talking about?
So the way the suggestion that we've made in the bill is to say it's in the third trimester and at the, you know, with the certification of the physician. So
how late in the third trimester would you be able to do that?
You know, it's very unfortunate that our physicians, witnesses, were not able to attend today to speak specifically.
No, I'm talking about your bill. How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay. I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay, but to the end of the third trimester.
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman.
I understand that. I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
I certainly could have said a week from her due date, and that would have been the same answer, correct?
That it's allowed in the bill, yes.
Yes.
Virginia Governor Ralph Northam was asked about the bill in a radio interview on Wednesday, and his response only added to the controversy.
There was a very contentious committee hearing yesterday when Fairfax County Delegate Kathy Tran made her case for lifting restrictions on third trimester abortions, as well as other restrictions now in place. And she was pressed by a Republican delegate about whether her bill would permit an abortion, even as a woman is essentially dilating, ready to give birth. And she answered that it would permit an abortion at that stage of labor. Do you support her measure and explain her answer?
Yeah, and I wasn't there, Julie, and I certainly can't speak for Delegate Tran, but I will tell you, first thing I would say, this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, you know, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
And do you think multiple physicians should have to weigh in, as is currently required? She's trying to lift that requirement.
Well, I think it's always good to get a second opinion and for at least two providers to be involved in that decision, because these decisions shouldn't be taken lightly. And, mm-hmm. and so, you know, I would certainly support more than one provider.
If you had been in the room with us as we were playing that soundtrack, you should have seen the faces. Mark, I'm going to open it up to you. What's your comments?
Well, there's a lot packed into that. So, you know, starting at the beginning, you know, all the attention is placed on lifting the restrictions of, you know, up until the third trimester. But the restrictions they're talking about lifting are what I think most people would consider not only common sense, but very much dealing with rights that go far beyond abortion. They're talking about lifting all parental consent laws within the state of Virginia. So you're talking about denying parents the rights to be involved with their children, with their daughter's decisions. They're also talking about deregulating the abortion facilities, so allowing the Department of Health to be able to regulate the abortion facilities. That would be struck down. They're really talking about striking down all state regulations around abortion. And, you know, how this can be even construed as something that would be in any way a positive is beyond me.
It's morally reprehensible on a lot of levels. But beyond that, it's some of the most unsound philosophical thinking I've ever heard.
Oh yeah, the
I mean, the illogic and the fallacies are legion.
Yeah, well, the commentary from Governor Northam, I started to chuckle because he's referring to the mother. I mean, he talks about this being between the mother and the doctors. Mm. So he recognizes that there's a relationship between the baby and the mother. You can't be a mother unless there's a baby that you're speaking of.
Correct.
So, you know, he's
they use that dehumanizing word fetus as a kind of, you know, placeholder for a non-human.
Right.
Is another element.
But once again, it's obviously all rhetoric, because he obviously, if he's using the term mother and he's using the term motherhood, right. He recognizes that that's her child.
Right. Right. That's just one of the philosophical mistakes that he made in that.
But I will jump in there and say, you know, if you're talking about philosophical consistency, he is being philosophically consistent when he moves from allowing abortion to allowing infanticide, and kind of says there's really no difference between abortion, you know, late term, as Delegate Tran said, you know, up until the point of dilation. If you're willing to allow killing babies at that point, then there's no philosophical reason why you wouldn't allow somebody to, you know, kill, which is what he was talking about, killing through neglect, a baby after it's born.
Yeah, abandoning a brand new, innocent, vulnerable child to the element, exposing them to the elements. I mean, it's Romanesque,
right,
in a certain sense, because the child will die fairly quickly on its own and suffer. What about the suffering? There's no mention whatsoever of suffering that the child will, whether through abortion and dismemberment and all the ghastly, gruesome details that go along with that, but also infanticide. I would agree morally, from a Catholic point of view, there really is no moral difference between abortion and infanticide. It's because it's always the direct, intentional killing of an innocent human life. So we know that that's intrinsically reprehensible, it's evil, it's wicked, and it's never permissible or justified.
Yeah, there's some legal ironies and legal inconsistencies within that I find interesting.
Oh, you know the one that almost took my breath away? Because it's such a fallacious argument. There's so much wrong. It's hard to just pin down one thing because I've got about 20 of them I want to get to in the show. But the one of them was, and what do you think of this? React to this, Mark. You know, men shouldn't be telling women what to do with their own bodies.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Because
philosophical consistency.
Well,
there.
I mean, ultimately, what you're talking about the procedure not being directed towards the woman's body, but being directed towards her child's body.
Right.
So
I mean, abortion is the right to a dead baby.
Yeah, and that I think that's exactly the way they see it, and that's one of the legal inconsistencies that I was going to bring up in Texas. There was a Supreme Court case a couple years ago that struck down a lot of the regulations around abortion on the grounds that they did nothing to address maternal health. So these regulations that were there, they weren't regulations that were directed towards making the procedure safer for women. So therefore, they were unconstitutional. And yet, when you're talking about abortion at the point of dilation, she's going to be delivering this baby. The abortion procedure does nothing to enhance the mom's health at that point. I mean, basically, there is nothing that is going to be more healthy about that abortion for that woman than it would be her delivering the baby. And yet, somehow, the legal inconsistency that the only regulations are allowed to enhance, women's health, but striking down regulations, maternal health doesn't need to be taken into account there is... To me, that's a huge fallacy within these laws. So,
well, and it's an appeal to authority to a certain extent too, because on one hand he's saying we ought to rest in the knowledge that these decisions are being made between women and their physicians. Well, there's plenty of physicians, to your point, Mark, who would argue that late-term abortions are never in a woman's best interest.
Right.
What about listening to those physicians?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a large amount of evidence out there that says, the abortion procedures that you would perform, during the third trimester are actually more dangerous to a certain extent than childbirth. So, early on, I think the scientific evidence shows, childbirth, an abortion that, the abortion may be safer in the first trimester. But when you're talking about later trimester abortions up until the point of dilation, there's a lot of research and a lot of physicians out there that say no, the abortion procedures are not safer at that point.
Well, we got to remember that Dr. Kermit Gosnell, who's arguably the most prolific mass murderer in American history, is currently serving multiple life sentences behind bars. You'd think the governor of Virginia would want to see him released.
Exactly.
Because he simply induced birth and then snipped the necks, the spines of the infants after they were born. And he's in jail for that. You'd think the governor would want to see him released celebrated,
right,
martyr.
Yeah, I would have loved
it's ghastly.
Yeah,
just outrageous. I'm just beside myself.
Yeah, I would love to have been that reporter to be able to follow up with that question of, governor, if you're in favor of comfort care, the best comfort would be to allow the baby not to feel pain. And honestly, that baby's going to suffer if you just neglect it. So what would be wrong with taking Kermit Gosnell's approach to this and just putting the baby out of its misery?
We need to take a break, and we'll be back with more on the subject right after this.
Have you been married and have since divorced? Do you think your marital status prevents you from coming to church? Most Catholics and non-Catholics unfortunately have a lot of misconceptions about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Pope Francis has recently encouraged all people with questions about marriage to make an appointment and talk with their parish priest. As Catholic priests, we look forward to the opportunity to help you on your journey through life. Please make an appointment to speak with a priest today. We are and will always be here for you.
Renewing minds.
Got my eyes off my worries and onto God.
Transforming lives.
It's amazing that one word can just transform you, that word that you want to hear.
Catholic Radio Indy.
This program contains graphic descriptions of abortion procedures. Opinions expressed are those of the participants and may or may not reflect those of this station.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, and we started off this show talking about the laws that are being passed in New York, those that are being debated in Virginia, in Vermont, in other states that would really codify Roe versus Wade, and the what Roe versus Wade allows, these would put them into state law. And the reason they're being put in there, we didn't get into this, we just listened to the clips that are just horrendous to listen to.
Oh, they're so disturbing.
But the reason that these are being bandied about is because I feel like there's a fear from abortion advocates that Roe versus Wade is going to be overturned, or at least changed, or at least the states are going to be given the right to be able to regulate abortion more. So those states where they already have a majority and they can kind of push their will in their state legislators, they're trying to codify Roe, and they're honestly trying to push the limits. So, and I don't think most people realize that what Roe versus Wade allows is exactly what that New York law says. You know, that Roe versus Wade allows for abortion for any reason whatsoever up until the point of birth. And that law in New York just sort of codified that and said, well, you know, that's what we're going to follow here, state law-wise here in New York.
You know, I kind of wonder if there's not a strategy going on here where in light of, you know, the possible changes to Roe v. Wade or adaptation thereof, is this a situation where many states and the groups who are supporting abortion are pushing for the absolute limit in the hope that when legislation is drafted in the future, they can at least dial it back and say, okay, drop the third trimester, first and second still okay. But anything in the first to second is off the table.
Yeah, you know, and it's hard to argue that, you know, there's some point along the way where abortion would be moral and ethical and everybody would be okay with abortion at some point, but we're not okay with it later in pregnancy. So, you know, if you're looking at consistency, you know, the consistent position is we should really be able to have abortion up until the point of birth and infanticide as well. You know, and until some line is drawn where we recognize the, you know, this baby as a person.
Yeah, that goes back to, among others, but Peter Singer, right? Professor Peter Singer out of Princeton, who is known for both his, I would say, extreme animal rights advocacy, but also his philosophical consistency around abortion, that he and some others would advocate for infanticide, right? That you have undesirable, his condition though, I think, is that you have an undesirable child. The child could be unwanted for a variety of different reasons, including, say, physical disabilities. And therefore, he would say, in light of abortion, infanticide up to 3 months or 2 years, I don't remember where he drew the line, would be permissible to engage in infanticide. With the hopes that the parents would have another child that would be more fitting or more to their taste.
Right.
I mean, it's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's just, it's kind of, it's beyond morally reprehensible, and it's got kind of a futuresque kind of feel to it, like a horrible, drama of the absurd.
Yeah. But the reality is this is the unveiling of what our laws and what the Supreme Court has said since 1973. So, you know, this isn't adding to anything that hasn't already been permissible.
It's a consistent development.
Exactly. Yeah. This has been permissible all along under Roe versus Wade. Just some states are beginning to codify that and put that under their own legal statutes.
That way, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, things revert to state law. These states like New York, Virginia, others, Vermont, others, more progressive states will have then enshrined in their state laws these quote-unquote reproductive rights.
Exactly. And, you know, you mentioned Peter Singer's argument in favor of all this. You know, Dr. Singer's arguments are all over the lot as far as this. But, you know, his standpoint and where he comes from is he doesn't recognize any difference between a human being and other animals.
Correct.
For him, there's no difference between human beings and animals. And so the same standards that are applied to other animals ought to be applied to human beings is kind of the way he sees it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that goes so far, as you said, I mean, the mind just it boggles over over how far afield from what the church teaches about humanity that standpoint really is.
Well, you know, one other element of this that we need to bring up here, Mark, I know you're eager to talk about this, is let's talk about physicians and their authority, and from a political philosophical standpoint, how would you see how physicians' authority and decision-making stand in relation to things like posited law?
I'm just going to quote George Santayana on that. Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Right.
And you know, I think we learned that lesson with Nazi Germany, quite honestly. You know, the whole Holocaust started because physicians were given the right to be able to decide who lives and dies. That's where it started. It started in 1933 with the Berlin physicians being given that right to decide which children were so far handicapped that they were life not worth living.
Right.
And so the whole rest of that history follows from giving physicians the right to make decisions over life and death, which flies in the face of medical tradition and what the medical arts were meant to be. Mm-hmm. But it also, you know, when you give physicians that right, a right that's traditionally given to the state, like I said, we've seen bad things happen in Nazi Germany, and why we would assume those similar types of things aren't going to repeat themselves here in America is beyond me.
Yeah, it's an example of where in Catholic moral philosophy, we recognize natural moral law. And in natural moral law, there's a hierarchy. The lowest rung of that ladder is human law, or laws that are passed through, you know, human effort, legislatures, etc. But what the next rung up that presides over as its judge of human laws is the natural law. And we know that when human laws do not comport with the natural law, they are deemed to be unjust. Since one of the precepts of the natural law is that life is an intrinsic good and ought to be defended, promoted, and is a good, these abortion laws, these infanticide laws are standing, therefore, as being unjust and no laws at all, according to Aquinas.
Right. And, you know, the principle within Catholic moral teaching of solidarity as well, that, you know, you...
Oh, what a violation of solidarity.
Exactly. that, you know, you're...
Thinking of the unborn.
Right.
Yeah, or born, in this
you know,
case.
There's so many philosophical steps that are being skipped over by these laws when you look at it from a Catholic perspective that is really hard, I think, to sit down. I mean, these laws are just bad and evil on so many fronts, but one of them is the
riddled with errors.
Right. But this, you're right. This notion that these are decisions that ought to be left to a physician and you know, and the patients that they're treating, you know, the tradition of the church, the tradition of sovereignty, etc., says that no, you know, the just decision making over issues like this are held by the state. Mm-hmm. And in our country, that state, that means us.
Right.
You know, that means us as citizens do have a right and an obligation to weigh into this so that we can defend the defenseless or those that have no voice. We can be their voice and their advocate. So far from, you know, well, we can allow doctors and other people to make life and death decisions about people that have no voice for themselves. Far from it, the law really ought to reflect this idea that no, these children ought to have an advocate. They really ought to have some way to have a voice for themselves.
You know, I'm going to bring up the ugly twin sister of abortion, which is euthanasia. And it, to me, it seems like the same moral impulse and failings that justify euthanasia, whether it's voluntary, involuntary, or non-voluntary euthanasia. It's the same blatant disregard for human life, that life is sacred, that we're made in the image and likeness of God, that we're discarding that for really selfish reasons.
Yeah, we've moved from an idea of intrinsic worth and dignity to an idea of value. And so this idea of
valueless.
And well, right. Value is a scale, right? So value is a scale that's determined by people.
You're determined no longer by valuable. Us,
right. And so your value is determined by what you can contribute, by how much other people care about you, by how much you can communicate, by to what extent we consider you have human ability. You know, all of these lead to what value you have. And then at some point we can determine that you are valueless and therefore not worthy of life. It's a dangerous, dangerous way to look at it.
Yeah, it reminds me, you know, of that there was an impulse a few years ago back under when the Affordable Care Act was being debated about coming up with quality of life scores so that you'd have these panels that would get, you know, assign you a certain score, and the score that you had sort of determined what level of treatment, if any, you were going to get. I mean, that to me is a complete abandonment of not only Catholic social teaching, but it moves us pretty quickly into the realm of utilitarianism, which you were just describing.
Yeah, anything that is going to try to ascribe some sort of value to human life, that ultimately the decision on whether this person is somehow worthy of keeping life. Now, I mean, obviously, medical technology is limited. Resources are limited. There are going to have to be decisions made at some point as to whether huge amounts of heroic, extraordinary care are warranted or not. Those decisions have to be made, and those have to be made at various levels along the way. So those are all debates about, I think, kind of the process and where the process lies, and you know, we should have those discussions, and I think those are licit discussions to have. But what happens is, I think those turn quickly into, is this life valuable? Does this life have value? How much value does this life add? How much of a burden is this person going to be?
Burdensome is a big one.
And those should not enter into those types of decisions.
Yep. Well, you're listening to The Catholic Cave here on Catholic Radio Indy.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest? Or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
This program contains graphic descriptions of abortion procedures. Opinions expressed are those of the participants and may or may not reflect those of this station.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, and we are discussing the horrendous, horrendous laws that seem to be moving through state legislators in some of the more progressive states, as you put it, Tim. Mm-hmm. New York, Virginia has debated these laws. Vermont is considering them. Rhode Island is considering them.
California can't be too far behind.
Yeah, exactly. And Oregon and Washington State, you know, the more progressive states are bringing these horrendous abortion laws that are basically putting into their state laws what's allowed by Roe versus Wade, which is abortion up until the point of birth for any stated reason by the mother whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So we're watching these laws come through, and it's honestly an unveiling. You know, it's an unveiling of what the state of our jurisprudence in the United States allows for, but it's also an unveiling of how radical I think the abortion advocates really are, that they really are advocating abortion up until the point of birth and infanticide beyond that. And so, you know, as this unveiling's going on, you know, people are suddenly taking notice of sort of what the state of our country's been. And, you know, the fact of the matter is the majority of Americans, you know, poll after poll shows the majority of Americans are not in favor of abortion to this extent.
Right.
You know, I think there's a lot of debate around first trimester of whether first trimester abortion ought to be allowed or not. And of course, if you're going to allow first trimester, it's hard to come up with philosophical arguments for why you wouldn't allow abortion further down the train. So,
correct.
Yeah, you know, either life begins at conception or it doesn't, quite honestly. But the majority of Americans are just appalled at what they're hearing, what they're seeing from delegates from Virginia, the governor from Virginia's comments. And, you know, I think that discomfort really came out. And President Trump actually brought up the feelings of the country at his recent State of the Union address.
Lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments from birth. These are living, feeling, beautiful babies who will never get the chance to share their love and their dreams with the world. And then we had the case of the governor of Virginia, where he stated he would execute a baby after birth to defend the dignity of every person. I am asking Congress to pass legislation to prohibit the late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in the mother's womb.
Now, the fact that the president brought that up at his State of the Union address, and it was cheered, granted, it was cheered by the Republicans there. The Democrats, mm-hmm. I think, kind of sat on their hands for that one as well. But the fact that he brought that up at the State of the Union address and called for pain-capable legislation at the federal level, which we have here in Indiana. You know, there's other states that are passing pain-capable laws. I think that indicates to me that, you know, the climate of the country really is towards trying to restrict abortion, not allow more of it.
Yeah, abortion, I think, is a hideous secret that people just have, we have a natural moral impulse to reject it because even though there's a certain permissibility that's allowed for it in the coarse culture that we live in, most Americans, when you look at different polling, the Marist poll done recently by the Knights of Columbus, Americans want significant restrictions on abortion. And so the president, I applaud those remarks. Those were phenomenal. This idea, this tragic Holocaust of murdering children, not only in the womb, but now there's pending legislation that's being held up by Democrats that would protect innocent human beings that somehow slip past the abortionist knife and are born alive. Even common sense legislation that would protect born human beings now is contentious.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to this idea that, you know, abortion is really a right that women have to dispose of their children. You know,
right.
That's really the right that we're talking about, and that somehow that's enshrined within our Constitution, which that's going to be challenged. I mean, there are so many cases coming in front of the Supreme Court. The state of Indiana has two right now that the Supreme Court is considering hearing. There's a Supreme Court case out of Alabama that I believe that's a heartbeat bill. I'm not quite sure. There's other heartbeat bills from Iowa, from Ohio that have been passed. So these are bills that would these are laws that have actually been put into law and then enjoined by the courts that outlaw abortion from the moment a heartbeat is heard. So these are being challenged to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is going to have to look at this and kind of try to figure out, okay, what do we do with the fact that we kind of made up a right out of whole cloth with Roe versus Wade in 1973?
Well, and in light of all the advancements in technology, embryology, ultrasounds, and all that, some of the excuses that were built into Roe versus Wade just do not stand. We know what's going on in the womb.
Right. And you know, one of the areas that science has allowed us most to see is the neurological development of unborn life. You know, babies are capable, and lots of studies show this, babies are capable of feeling pain.
Well,
you
sure.
know, somewhere 17, 18 week range, right. maybe even earlier than that. And so, you know, these abortion laws that are allowing these babies to be killed up to the point of birth, you're dealing with painful procedures. You know, one of the bills we're working on here in Indiana right now is to outlaw dismemberment abortion, which is a later term procedure where literally, you know, the baby is torn piece by piece apart in his mother's womb.
While they're alive.
While they're alive, exactly. And
it's ghastly.
It is. It is horrible. It is horrible. And you're seeing pushes like this on the state level to address abortion for what it is, a ghastly, horrendous human rights abuse. And so the states are doing all that the Supreme Court is going to allow them to do to restrict this. And I would imagine if Roe versus Wade is overturned, there'll be a number of states, hopefully Indiana included, that would outlaw abortion altogether.
Well, Mark, you used a term there just a moment ago. You said this was a human rights issue. One of the things that I was reading an article earlier, in Vermont, they're working on a right to abortion bill. And one of the statements in that bill says every individual who becomes pregnant has the fundamental right to choose to carry a pregnancy to term, give birth to a child, or to have an abortion. A fertilized egg, embryo, or fetus shall not have independent rights under Vermont law.
You know, philosophically speaking, that is just a mess. You know, first off,
right.
I mean, you have to step back. Okay, if you're going to claim human rights, then where do those human rights come from? Are human rights something that are just arbitrarily made up by the state legislature of Vermont? No, human rights are things that we are endowed with by our creator. So if rights are things that are endowed with by our creator, Where do those begin? They begin with the creation of that human life.
Right. What you're pointing to is one of the problems that we're facing, which is pointed out very aptly in Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life by Pope St. John Paul the Great, which is he points out one of the prominent features of the abortion, the pro-abortion position, is this notion of an eclipse of God. That God, you'll notice in any of this legislation, there's no reference to the sanctity of life or to creation, as you were bringing up. It's a very secular, atheistic, godless view of humanity. And it's one where I would say a Lenin/Trotsky/Stalinist view, totalitarian communist view of the human person is at work, because in that ideological system, the state, with a capital S, reigns supreme over the individual, and the Catholic understanding is the inverse of that.
In order for the Supreme Court to continue to tell states they have no right to interfere in this, they've had to continue to maintain that where human life comes from and the beginnings of human life and the origins of human life is a mystery. It's some cosmic secret out there that we have no idea where human life begins, and we have no idea where these babies are coming from. They're just sort
or of how they happen.
Exactly. They're just sort
it's
of
mysterious.
Happening upon these women and
like catching a cold.
Right, asserting themselves. So they've had to read the preambles of Casey versus Planned Parenthood and other Supreme Court cases, the Supreme Court is explicit with that. Well, until science can tell us when human life begins, meanwhile, you can look at just about every embryology book there is that
right.
says human life begins at conception, but they have to keep that charade because human rights, once again, are prefaced on the idea that these are not things that are granted by the government. They're not positive law. Human rights are not things that are posited by the Vermont legislature. They are rights that we have just by our nature as human beings.
Right. And the just society recognizes them.
Correct.
So the just government, the government that's interested in good order and interested in justice, will recognize the rights that each human person is endowed with by virtue of the dignity that we have for being what we are, not what we're capable of.
You know, and the ramifications of this go far beyond abortion.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you say that human rights are things that are written into law, they're posited by our state legislators, they're not things that adhere to us just by nature of us being human, you've suddenly opened it up for any number of human rights to be taken away.
Right.
Or any number of human rights to be added. And, you know, when you start talking about human rights being added, you know, that adds a whole mess to the legal landscape.
Well, it's not lost on me that when Kent was reading that quote about the Vermont legislature, they talked about, they didn't say when a woman becomes pregnant, they said when an individual. And they used the word individual, I believe, on purpose because of the transgender movement, they're not going to lock themselves into a gender-specific pregnancy.
Right.
As odd as that sounds, but that already, they're already anticipating, you know, where medical technology can make all sorts of peculiar and unnatural arrangements possible.
Yeah, and it's not just medical technology. If you untether law from the natural state of human beings. In other words, if you say that, well, basically what's allowed and what's not allowed is totally arbitrary and totally up to us and has no connection to human nature, it has no connection to society, it has no connection to anything outside of our power, you are opening up a whole can of worms that I don't think we really want to see in this country.
Yeah, I would call that the abandonment of the natural law at our peril.
We need to take a break, and we'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
It's foundation, and that foundation is the Word of Jesus Christ.
Catholic Radio Indy.
To help lift my spirit and brighten my mood.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You're on a journey, in a race, in the company of others.
Imperfection makes you human. Forgiveness offers life, and opportunity brings hope.
Good news and great company. Catholic Radio Indy.
This program contains graphic descriptions of abortion procedures. Opinions expressed are those of the participants and may or may not reflect those of this station. Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford in the Cave, along with Timothy O'Donnell and Mark Tuttle. Gentlemen, I ran across something on the internet the other day that I think fits in with the thought process we're dealing with right now. We hold these views to be self-evident, that all people are not created equal and therefore should be endowed by their government with only those rights which the state deems necessary for the perceived good of the people.
Oh, boy.
Too bad we're in our last segment.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that is horrendous. Because when you say they're only endowed by our government, what you're saying are only endowed by those who have the power to enforce their will.
Yeah. And that's again, going back to Evangelium Vitae, that's what the Holy Father described as the war of the strong against the weak.
Exactly. And it does. If once you take away that recognition of human rights that are grounded in human nature, then it does become a contest of he who has the most power.
Yeah. And it's incredibly dehumanizing. It's a totalitarian type of ideological system that then eclipses, again, the sense of God, religion, faith, all that is dispensed with for a purely secularist, humanist point of view. And then it becomes, then we're really going to embrace something you and I have talked about on previous shows, this enlightenment philosophical system of sort of limitlessness of the human person.
Yeah, because that's very attractive. I mean, it's one thing to point to a quote like Kent just read, and you sit there and go, oh my gosh, they're talking about bringing in some sort of totalitarian regime where the government has all power to dictate what it wants. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I think people buy into this because it's put forward in a much more attractive guise. It's
sure.
put forward in a in
sin
a,
always is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's put forward in a guise that's non-sinful. It's mm-hmm. it's put forward in a guise of, you know, like you said, Enlightenment principles, which are ultimately Christian principles when you get down to most of what's being pushed there. But it's being pushed in a way where, okay, yes, these are the way a good Christian ought to act, but we're going to act that way because people say we should. Reason says we should, not because nature is constructed in such a way by God that we ought to recognize it. So, you know, it's a very subtle shift when you go from the idea that you have natural rights and natural law because of the way the universe has been constructed by our Creator, to we have rights because reason recognizes them. And, you know, the rights may be, we may come to the same conclusion on the rights, but the sources, at least for now, but the sources are separate. Right. It's very, very subtle.
You know, one of the things we want to do too here before we run out of time is, let's talk about the state of Indiana.
Exactly, because, you know, Indiana is not New York. It's not Vermont. It's not Virginia. We're not pushing these types of laws here. And I think that's part of the big picture of what's going on. While you have states, the progressive states, trying to lock down, you know, the rights to abortion that they have in their states, you have other states that are pushing the envelope to try to outlaw abortion. Mm-hmm. And so I think as Roe versus Wade is overturned, eroded, disregarded, whatever the Supreme Court is going to decide to do with Roe versus Wade. And I think that decision is imminent. I mean, there's a number of cases that are pushing against Roe versus Wade from a lot of different angles. Two of them from the state of Indiana. One of them, you know, we talk about this in the terms of human rights. Well, one of the laws that we passed in Indiana addresses abortion exactly from that standpoint. We passed a law that said abortion should be outlawed for purposes of discrimination. In other words, you can't have an abortion because of the sex of the baby, disability of the baby, anything that our civil right laws protect, these protected classes of people. That's another phrase that you're going to hear this legislative mm-hmm. session coming up a lot. But any of these protected classes, you can't have an abortion because of that. So this is looking at Roe versus Wade from a different angle, saying, you know, look, the states have a right to outlaw discrimination. Abortion is being used for discrimination. Therefore, the states do have a right to interfere in abortion from that direction. So there's that. The Supreme Court right now is what's called relisting that bill. In other words, they're still in the process of considering whether they want to hear that this year.
Okay.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg's health looms large in that because she is seen as one of the justices that they almost have to have weigh in on these abortion mm-hmm. cases. And her health is bad right now. She hasn't been able to conference with the rest of the court. So I think they're continuing to relist that decision until Ruth Bader Ginsburg is able to kind of weigh in on with her
or opinion. Retire.
Or retire, yeah. Or yeah, exactly.
My prayer.
or indicate in some way that she won't be able to, exactly. Yeah. So you know, there's that. There's any number of these heartbeat laws that are being mm-hmm. challenged, and you know, I think the Supreme Court has kind of spoken on that. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. The Supreme Court has said no, states do not have a right to do that. So I don't know that they will actually hear them, but they're being pushed up that mm-hmm. direction. Any number of restrictions of what the states are allowed to restrict, whether it's, you know, the abortionist needing to have hospital privileges and being, you know, having what I would consider reasonable care
and resources,
exactly, and safety around it. Those are being pushed. So, you know, the Supreme Court is constantly being pushed to reconsider this. And so in states like Indiana, where luckily we are blessed with a strong pro-life legislature, a strongly pro-life governor, a strongly pro-life attorney general, and for the most part, a strongly pro-life public, you know, we're going to be pushing the envelope the other direction from where it's going to be being pushed in places like, you know, New Hampshire, Vermont, New York, you know, those types of states.
Well, a great example of that recently, Mark, was the Indiana March for Life. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, the Indiana March for Life, we were once again trying to commemorate and bring to attention the barbarity of Roe versus Wade. Little did we know that our voices were going to be amplified by the New York State Legislature and kind of unveiling how bad Roe versus Wade
yeah,
really is.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. But we had, you know, between, you know, probably 700, 800, you know, maybe up to 1,000 people march through the streets of downtown Indianapolis. And it was
on January 22nd.
On January 22nd. And it was warmly received, you know. You know, as you marched by all these cars that, you know, they were being inconvenienced by this. I felt a little bit bad for them because, you know, it's a work day. They're trying to get to where they need to, and suddenly 1,000 pro-life marchers are blocking off the streets of Indianapolis. But we were warmly received by those cars that were standing there. We got lots of thumbs up, lots of honks, lots of waves, lots of support from the people that were watching us in their cars as they were being inconvenienced by us. So it was warmly received by them. The state legislature sent out several people. And once again, they had to go out of their way to be able to speak to the crowd that day because they were in session. Exactly.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So the one that I stood out the most was Representative Christy Stutzman. You know, she's a freshman legislator, and she got permission from House Speaker Bosma to be able to leave session to be able to come to speak to the crowd, which was just fantastic.
She had a great message,
yeah,
too.
She had a great message, and the fact that Speaker Bosma was willing to allow some of his representatives to come out to speak to the crowd, that says a lot about him as well, of how supportive he is of this cause.
Yeah, and Senator Todd Young was there. I mean, that was impressive.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, he took time out to make sure that he was there for that, as well as you know, I think he wanted to be at the pre-event rally as well. So, you know, he wanted to support kind of the whole day's worth of activities that were going on.
The other thing I noticed having attended was similar to the March for Life in D.C., there were a lot of young people. There are a lot of schools represented, and it's a school day. It was a school day for them, too. But that was so encouraging to see the young people at these March for Life.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a direct result, I think, of a lot of the pro-life activity that has happened in the non-legislative. You know, we've talked about laws and legislation and court battles, but the real battle that takes place is the battle for the lives of these children that our pregnancy resource centers are engaged in, the sidewalk counselors out in front of the abortion facilities are engaged in, all the prayer warriors that are in Eucharistic chapels around the city are engaged in praying for the lives of these children. And so we've seen the numbers over, you know, the last, you know, 20 years or so go down. And so the numbers of abortions are approaching what they were when Roe versus Wade was passed in 1973, which is astonishing when you think about it.
Yeah, that's great.
And each of those lives that are saved, their mom has a story, and that story is passed on to the children, and the children pass it on to their friends. And so you have a generation that's growing up hearing about, you know, women in adverse circumstances that were able to find the help, the caring, the nurturing they needed through the church in their local community. And as a result, they have a friend. They have, you know, somebody that's there in high school. They have somebody that they're going to classes with in college. You know, these kids are growing up with that. They're seeing that. And so they're becoming advocates for the unborn in numbers that we haven't seen in previous generations.
Yeah, I think to go back to the quote that we played earlier from the president, these are real people that have love to share and dreams to pursue. And that's something we simply cannot overlook.
Yeah, and I think it's a real indictment against our communities when somebody says, well, we don't have the resources, we don't have the ability to care for these people, whoever these people are, whether you're talking about the
right.
beginning of life or
the
whether you're talking about
these people,
whether you're talking about the end of life. Mm-hmm. You know, that statement is such an insult to our communities to say that, you know, your Christian love isn't big enough to be able to extend to all human beings that you mm-hmm. encounter in your cities. And, you know, I think the churches are standing up. And, you know, we had both the Archbishop and the Bishop of Lafayette, the Archbishop of Indianapolis, there at the march. The churches are standing up more to say, no, every person is welcome. Every person is a gift of God. And we, as the community of Indianapolis, have enough resources to care for every person.
You know, I think one of the things that we have to really look at here in the end is the fact that being Christians, being Catholics, particularly on this show, we're looking at a world that is now seeing us as foolish. And I want to share with you as we close here a quote from Justice Antonin Scalia. God assumed from the beginning that the wise of the world would view Christians as fools, and he has not been disappointed. If I have brought any message today, it is this. Have the courage to have your wisdom regarded as stupidity. Be fools for Christ, and have the courage to suffer the contempt of the sophisticated world.
We are called to be witnesses. We're called to stand up for those without a voice. And you're right, Kent. I mean, sometimes when you stand up for those that can't speak for themselves, the world is going to look at you and ask, well, who's this fool that's putting himself in the line of fire for somebody that we can't even see? But that is our Catholic calling. That is what we're called to do. We are called to stand up for those that can't speak for themselves.
Well, and look what the state did to our Lord and Savior. They crucified him. So if we're going to imitate Christ, we have to be prepared to walk the way of suffering as he did.
And that is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for this week. Until next time, for Timothy O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle, I'm Kent Blandford. May God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.